Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and this hour, True History, later on from the Cavalcade of America from 1952. But first, the Hallmark Hall of Fame brings us the story of Alfred Nobel, a CBS broadcast from December 13, 1953.
Remember, a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. Tonight, from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark cards bring you an unusual true story on the Hallmark Hall of Fame. And here's our distinguished host, Mr. Lionel Barrymore.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Hallmark Hall of Fame, where we offer you true stories about real people. Just 3 days ago in Oslo, Norway, the Nobel Foundation awarded their annual peace prizes. This was done according to the terms of the will of the late Alfred Bernard Nobel. Tonight we tell you the little-known story behind that will. And later in the broadcast, you'll hear a recorded report from Oslo with a dramatic highlight of the Nobel Award. Now, here is Frank Goss for the makers of Hallmark cards.
Want to delight your friends during the new year by remembering their birthdays and wedding anniversaries? It's easy if you'll get your Hallmark date book for 1954. You'll find this page-by-page calendar booklet has plenty of space for jotting down important dates and names and addresses, too. What's more, the Hallmark date book is a gift to you from the fine stores that feature Hallmark cards, the cards you send when you care enough to send the very best. Lionel Barrymore appears by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the Cole Porter musical Kiss Me, Kate, starring Katherine Grayson, Howard Keel, and Ann Miller. And now Mr. Barrymore brings you the story of Alfred Nobel on the Hallmark Hall of Fame.
Alfred Nobel was an inventive genius. He might also be called a business magnate, a writer, a poet, a thinker. Whatever label history shall finally give to this strange and solitary man, one fact is apparent. His life and his actions have made an indelible and shaping imprint on the life and actions of every man since his time. Our story begins in Helsingborg, Sweden, 1864.
I am Constable Brun. I'm investigating the explosion. Sit there. Your full name?
Alfred Bernhard Nobel.
Age?
31.
Your work?
I'm a civil engineer. I worked with my father at the factory.
I'm well aware of that, Mr. Nobel. Now tell me, how did the explosion occur?
I don't know. I've been trying to think.
Then perhaps you can tell me who is responsible.
Well, I applied for the license. I hold the patent. It's my business.
Ah. Then you're responsible, Mr. Nobel. I intend to make that fact public at an official inquiry.
May I go now, Constable?
Just one thing more, Mr. Nobel. Come. Identify him.
I've never seen him. Possibly just a passerby.
Huh. Another passerby?
No.
Who is he? Who is he?
Emil Nobel.
What?
My youngest brother.
Oh, well. Thank you. You may go now, Mr. Nobel.
October 4, 1867. Dear Mother, nitroglycerin, as we use it in liquid form, is unmanageable. And that was the reason for our personal disaster. I have recently succeeded in combining it with an absorbent. The new product is entirely safe. We intend to manufacture it through companies in all parts of the world. We call it dynamite.
May I come in?
Mother! Well, this is a nice surprise.
How are you, my son?
Forgive me, Mother.
Oh, headaches again?
Yes, constantly. For a week now.
Pierre tells me you spent every waking hour in the laboratory or in a business meeting. You're getting to be a very rich man at the price of these headaches.
The doctors tell me nitroglycerin causes it.
A mansion in Paris, another one in Italy, one in England, horses, carriages, paintings, wardrobes, all that money can buy. Do you have to work?
Mother, you don't understand.
I've seen how you live in the few weeks you've been home organizing the new factory. Do you ever go out with your friends?
Friends? What friends? Where are they? Who are they? Everywhere I turn, they come to me with schemes, ambitions.
I have no scheme.
No, I know, Mother. And you're the only one I trust.
That's a very nice thing to say to a mother. But I'll try very, very hard to forget you even said it. Alfred, I can love you and be devoted to you. But you need warmth and affection from someone else.
Well, perhaps. I'll be leaving soon. The Prussians and the French have come to terms. I'll be working in Paris again.
Oh, Alfred. No matter where you go, it'll be the same.
What?
I'm afraid you're the loneliest millionaire on earth.
I beg your pardon.
Oui, monsieur?
I would like to put an advertisement in your paper.
Oui.
Answerable in care of the editorial office. Yes, here it is.
This is for yourself, monsieur?
Yes, that's right.
And just as it is written?
Yes, yes.
It will appear tomorrow then, monsieur.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
Oui.
Good day.
Good day. Elderly, cultured gentleman, very wealthy, speaks 5 languages, resident of Paris, seeks equally mature lady as secretary and supervisor of household. Oh, monsieur.
During his lifetime, Alfred Nobel was known as the Dynamite King. The day he placed the advertisement for a secretary, he destined himself to become known as the Man of Peace. There was just a single response to his advertisement.
Dear sir, I would be pleased if you would consider the qualifications which I have enumerated below. I am 33 years of age, unmarried, and have been employed until recently as governess in the home of Baron von Suttner. I speak 5 languages besides German, English, French, Spanish, Italian.
Countess Kinski?
Why, yes. You are Mr. Nobel?
How do you do? I took rooms for you at the Grand. Oh,
that was very thoughtful. Something wrong?
You're much younger than you say.
No, Mr. Nobel. But I'll admit I am startled. I was expecting an elderly man. You can't be over 40.
Yeah. Well, I am.
Something is wrong now?
No. It's just that I didn't expect you to measure up to your letter.
Well, you are a very strange person, Mr. Nobel. I won't ask you what you have decided now that you have seen me.
I've decided that your letters are not worthy of you. Welcome to Paris, Bertha Kinski.
Monsieur Laibach.
Good evening, Pierre. Will you tell Mr. Nobel I'm waiting for him?
Oh, he is not here, monsieur. He has been away every evening this week. He is completely contemptuous of work. You met the Comtesse?
Briefly. She is going to work for him, isn't she?
As soon as her quarters in the main building are arranged. I believe Mademoiselle is here to stay.
Ask him to stop, please.
Stop here, driver.
This is the Louvre?
Yes.
That burned-up shell that was once so splendid. The Prussian gunners must have been very accurate during the war.
Bertha, you're trembling.
I really shouldn't, see? After all, I was an officer's daughter. Wars have always been nothing more than periodic visitations. Such as earthquakes and floods.
There will always be wars. I wish there were a way to stop them.
There is, Alfred.
Oh, there is.
You are a rich and powerful man. Suppose you were to use your wealth and power to stop wars.
Yes, I've thought of it. All I have to do is to work very hard and invent something so terrible that any participants would be in danger of complete annihilation.
Stop it,
sir.
Is that why you invented dynamite? For war?
For everything but war. For rivers to be dredged. Mines to be opened, harbors and buildings, and all of the things that would be impossible without it. Bertha, you know that is honestly the fact.
When I first met you at the station, I was truly surprised that the Dynamite King could have such blue eyes and a kindly face. But you are a cynic, Alfred. You are afraid to face facts.
Facts? I face the facts in my laboratory. Driver, move on.
Alfred?
Bertha, I'm leaving for Stockholm in an hour.
Oh?
I came by to apologize before I left. I have thought a great deal about what we were discussing earlier. All my life, I've thought of it. And all my life, I have thought of someone like you.
Oh.
In our few days together, I've discovered a great deal.
Have you, Alfred?
Don't you understand?
Wait. I must tell you. There is someone else. The son of the family I worked for in Vienna. Otto von Suttner. His family objected. It is all over now.
Thank you for telling me. I shan't be away too long. A little time will pass. You will have a new life here, and you'll forget.
Welcome back, monsieur.
How is she? How is her apartment? Is she comfortable?
Monsieur Nobel, if you will let me take your coat.
Yes, 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 here. Is she in her apartment now?
Mademoiselle is not here.
What?
She is not here, monsieur. She left 2 days ago. This is for you.
Forgive me, Alfred. I could not forget him. I am now Baroness von Suttner, in spite of the family objections. Wish us luck. I have told my husband about you, And both now feel you are our most precious friend.
Yes. Alfred Nobel had found love and lost it. Once again, he was a lonely man in a world of strangers. And the years went by.
We must see Nobel. We must see. Gentlemen, it is impossible to talk to him. He is not here.
What? Right? Not here?
Monsieur Nobel left 2 days ago for Zurich.
Zurich? Is he going to address the Peace Congress?
I cannot answer that.
I know Baroness von Sutter is there. Did he go to see her?
I suspect he did go to see her.
Well, von Sutter, the woman who wrote the book Lay Down Arms?
Yes.
When will he return? What will we do?
I suggest you wait until you hear from Monsieur Nobel.
Brought you here,
Arcot. I wanted to see you address a peace congress. I wanted to hear what you had to say.
Is that all?
No. More than that, the memory of a conversation we had one night on the Champs-Élysées. I'd like to finish it. I remember telling you that my plan to end wars was to make them so frightful that no nation would dare enter into one.
Yes, I remember.
Quite different from the disarmament and Congress of Nations that you proposed in your book.
I believe what I wrote.
Ah, my dear, I'm convinced of that. Your book caused me to ask myself many questions about peace.
Do you think that nations, large and small, weak and strong, could find a solution? All the nations?
Yes, provided they were armed with another weapon. Knowledge. That is our greatest hope for the future. To spread knowledge is to spread well-being. Knowledge is the real weapon. And someday, I will help the world to recognize it.
Oh, Alfred.
So, at last, we finish our conversation on the Champs-Élysées.
That was the last time Baroness von Suttner saw Alfred Nobel alive. A few months later, he died in his laboratory in San Remo, Italy.
Pierre, well, what are you doing in Vienna?
I have come to see you, madame. You have heard of Monsieur Nobel's death?
Yes, I know.
I brought you a copy of this.
What is it?
His will, madame. I thought you would want to see it. Goodbye, madame.
The capital shall constitute a fund, annual interest on which shall be awarded as prizes to those persons who, during the previous year, have rendered the greatest services to mankind. To the person who has made the most important contribution in the realm of physics, chemistry, medicine, literature. And one part to the person who has done the most or best work for the brotherhood of nations. The abolition or reduction of standing armies, as well as for the formalization of peace congresses. Alfred. Alfred.
Nobel remains an indomitable hope of the future. The most magnificent gesture that a private individual has ever had the desire or ability to make. The prize winners have included such men and women as Marconi, Madame Curie, Eugene O'Neill, Dr. Ralph Bunch, and Winston Churchill. People from all lands who have done a service for all mankind. Indeed, an inspiration in a fretful world. And the latest distinguished American name to be added to this truly distinguished list is that of General George C. Marshall, winner of the Nobel Peace Prize for 1953.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Hallmark Hall of Fame takes you now to Oslo, Norway.
This is Carl Rick, Norwegian Broadcasting, Oslo, calling CBS on the Nobel Peace Prize Award today. Awarding speech and General Marshall acceptance speech, interrupted by demonstrations of three communists in the gallery.
Yeah. Dear Mr. Marshall, it's with deep feeling of sympathy and gratitude that we are here today. We meet you, a man whose whole career was that of a soldier. But when you had the position in your government, you proposed and went in for the most constructive, peaceful work we have seen in this century. You saw that there is no foundation for peace when there is economic chaos and misery amongst people. With these words, I have the honor. I have the great honor to go over to you the insignia of the Nobel Peace Prize, the diploma, and the gold medal.
Your Majesty, Your Highness, members of the Nobel Committee, ladies and gentlemen, I accept this honor with profound gratitude that has been conferred upon me by the Nobel Committee. And I do it not merely for myself, more especially for the American people who alone made possible the authority and possible the funds which made the European recovery program a reality. Thank you very much.
What's the deal? What could be a more moving tribute to the memory of Albert Nobel? And now here's Frank Goss from the makers of Hallmark cards.
If you'd like to delight your friends this Christmas with a card that's really a gift and decoration, too, here's a bright idea. Choose new Hallmark Christmas Stagecoach cards at a store where Hallmark cards are sold. You see, the Stagecoach is a most attractive card that comes folded flat in its own mailing envelope and can be set up to hold all the other cards your friends receive. Each of these costs just $1, including mailing envelope. And, of course, each has that Hallmark and crown, the familiar symbol that means you care enough to send the very best. And now here again is Lionel Barrymore.
Frank? I think those new combination card, gift, and decorations are a mighty fine new way to say Merry Christmas. It's hard to believe Christmas is almost here. It's such a wonderful time, Frank. I kind of wish we could always have Christmas 2 weeks away to look forward to. I always like to watch the change that comes over people this time of year. You can see it in folks' eyes, and hear it as people hum some Christmas song, you know. And even in the crowded stores, people seem to have more consideration of their fellow shoppers. And the whole town seems to dress up for Christmas. windows and homes and streets all blossom out in holiday colors. And all that's drab and the unpleasant and the worries of the world seem to take a temporary back seat. Yes, I wish Christmas were always 2 weeks away. And speaking of weeks away, I'm really looking forward to next week on the Hallmark Hall of Fame. Without this annual event, Christmas wouldn't seem like Christmas to me.
Nor would it to most people, Mr. Barrymore. For next week, the Hallmark Hall of Fame is proud to join you in presenting A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, and to have you portray the immortal Scrooge for your 19th year.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Frank. Thank you very much. And remember, you're also invited to the Hallmark Hall of Fame on television every Sunday, starring Miss Sarah Churchill, where next Sunday, Hallmark will again present the famous Amol and the Night Visitor. Until next week, then, this is Lionel Barrymore saying good night.
The Hallmark Hall of Fame, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS broadcast from the 13th of December, 1953. This is an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now, a true story told on the Cavalcade of America, featuring movie actor Wendell Corey, who in the same year of this broadcast was seen on the silver screen in four different movies and on the small screen in four different TV series. This broadcast called Dr. Commando from February 26th, 1952 on NBC.
The DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry, presents the Cavalcade of America. Tonight, Dr. Commando, the true story of a daring Army medical officer in Korea. Tonight's star, Wendell Corey, as Brigadier General Crawford F. Sams. March 1951, General MacArthur's headquarters in Tokyo. One of his staff is outlining plans for military operation.
Colonel, you will move with your forces along this line here.
How far, General?
To this point here. From there? Yes, what is it?
General, I know you are not to be disturbed, but this dispatch...
Let's see it.
It concerns the area we are moving into, General.
Concerns. Send General Sams to me at once.
Yes, sir, right away.
What is it, General?
This whole area up here, the area we were going to move into...
Yes?
Bubonic plague.
That was the beginning of the whole affair. The beginning that brought me, Brigadier General Crawford F. Sams, into the picture. I was chief of the Public Health and Welfare Section of the United Nations Command in the Far East. And anything like plague was my baby.
What do you make of it, Sams?
Well, General, this dispatch doesn't say that it is the plague.
What is this thing they call it, this Hooksapyeong?
Oh, that means black death. It's a vague term.
All right, then. Look at the symptoms. Swelling, victims turned black at death.
There's been no bubonic plague in Korea since 1911.
Well, there's probably one now.
There's nothing conclusive in this.
Look, Sams, look at this map. United Nations forces are moving up. Moving up in 2 weeks, right through here.
Where this so-called plague is thickest.
Right. Now, what I want to know is, what are we going to do about it?
I took the dispatch back to my office and studied it. Listed the symptoms. Sores, swelling, high fever, high mortality. I wondered how reliable the report was. Was it made by a trained medical man? Or by a layman? There was not enough in the dispatch to go on. I had to have more information, more facts.
General Sams, you sent for me?
Lieutenant Drake?
Yes, sir.
How are you? Sit down.
Thank you, sir. I thought you'd be sending for me.
You did? Why?
A dispatch on the plague epidemic in North Korea.
You Navy intelligence people know everything, don't you?
Not quite, sir.
All right. Drake, they tell me you have all sorts of fancy ways of slipping people in behind enemy lines and getting them out alive.
Well, sir,
I don't want to know all your secrets. All I want to know is, could you get a man... come in.
Look at this map. Could you get a man into this area here? See, up here about 50 miles behind the lines?
Well, let me take a look. Mm-hmm, I see.
Parachute, maybe. Or isn't that the way it's done?
Well, it would depend on the nature of the mission.
Well, I've got to send a man in here to find out if this thing is the plague or something else.
A doctor?
Of course a doctor. What's wrong with a doctor?
Well, it's just that it requires a certain technique.
Have you been behind the lines?
Oh, sure, many times. That's my job.
Regular commuter, huh?
Not quite.
Well, what do you think?
Well, the LCI 1091 will come in handy.
You mean that landing craft the Navy's got fitted out as a lab?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll use it. But can you get the man in behind the lines?
I think we'd be able to work out something with our guerrilla organization.
Okay, come on. We're going to see the chief of staff.
Time, Sams, time. We've got to keep remembering time.
I appreciate that, General.
This whole thing is geared to start moving up in 2 weeks.
Yes, General, I know.
All right. Now, you want to put a man ashore behind the enemy lines up in this area here?
Right. Plague vaccine is not only expensive, but giving it to all our forces would be a tremendous time-consuming job.
If this is plague, you mean we might not be able to move on schedule.
Right, but it may not be plague.
Well, but does Drake here think he can take care of your man?
We can work it, General, with the usual risks, of course.
Usual risks. All right, Sams. You got a good man to send?
Yes, I think he's a pretty good man.
Pretty good's not good enough.
Well, then I think he's an excellent man.
Who is he?
Myself.
You?
Yes.
I won't hear of it.
Well, I'm the logical one.
You're too important here.
Look, General, I think I'm more important on this job. There isn't one doctor in thousands who's ever seen the plague. I've had experience with it.
But the whole medical program here in Japan depends on you.
And the safety of all the United Nations forces depends on the correct diagnosis of this epidemic.
Yeah. Well, Drake, do you still think you can get your man behind the lines with the usual risks?
I still think we can do it, General. Of course, the risk is increased.
You'll make a fine prize, Sams, if you fall into the hands of the communists.
Oh, we'll try to keep anyone from knowing he's a general, sir. We'll call him Mr. Yee.
Then who'll take him behind the lines?
I'll take him, sir.
Good. You sure you want to do this, Sams?
I'm sure.
All right, then. I deliver you into the hands of the Navy.
Thank you, General.
Thank you, Mr. Yee.
Lieutenant Drake and I flew to Busan. Then, on a raw, cold, late winter's day, we boarded the LCI 1091, a floating laboratory ready to sail up and down the Korean coast to be on hand wherever disease might break out.
You and I will share this stateroom, General.
Good.
Yeah, looks like we're going to have a rough sea.
Oh, that's okay. I'm a pretty good sailor.
Good.
I'd better be to uphold the honor of the Army.
Oh, I think you've taken care of that already, General, by coming on this jaunt.
I haven't had a chance to thank you yet for deciding to come along with me. Give me a personal escort. It's reassuring, Lieutenant.
I'm glad of that, sir. But I want to warn you, it's no guarantee. General.
Yes?
I was wondering, we may be handling some of these plague victims. That is, if it's necessary to bring any back to the ship and...
I know what you're thinking. We ought to be inoculated.
Yes, sir.
Well, truth is, we haven't got time for it. It takes 8 days for inoculation against plague to take effect, and we haven't got that kind of time.
I see.
Maybe I should have told you this before I let you volunteer.
It wouldn't have mattered.
Don't worry. We'll take all the precautions we can. Now, tell me something about this interpreter we're going to have.
He's a Korean by the name of Han.
You trust him?
Yes, sir.
Will I be Mr. Yee to him?
No, he knows who you are.
You must trust him.
I do. He's been awarded 2 silver stars by the United States.
Well, that's good enough for me. We headed north. Twice we had to turn back because of rough weather, but finally it quieted down enough so that we could keep on our course. And that night we arrived at an island off the coast which is held by South Korean guerrillas.
Here we were to make further arrangements for our landing on the mainland, and I became Mr. Yi. When we went ashore, we were met by a guerrilla captain.
No good. No good, Lieutenant Drake.
What's the matter, Captain?
Landing on coast where you want. It's impossible.
Why's that?
I received your orders, Lieutenant Drake. Find out what I could about landing Mr. Yi. Where it would be best.
Yes, well, what did you find out?
I sent 16 men 2 days ago. All trained guerrillas, no mainland. They not come back.
Well, the sea's been rough. Maybe they've been...
No. Villagers say somebody talk. They captured by communists.
But did they know anything about our plans?
They had to know a little of your plans, Lieutenant.
What does this add up to, Drake?
I'm not sure yet.
Lieutenant, I have carried on guerrilla fighting this coast sometime now. Other day, Chinese moving, fresh troops.
What? Oh, that's just fine. Fresh troops and our own men captured by the commies.
Drake, just come over here a minute. Can't we make a landing someplace else?
Well, it's not that simple, sir. Certain preparations had to be made for our arrival. Won't do us any good just to land on a strange coastline and start looking for victims of the epidemic. We have to have information where they are.
Lieutenant, Lieutenant.
Yes?
Still one more chance. Then I send off the first group, maybe heard for.
You say we can't land without some help from shore?
It'd be a pointless risk. We just have to wait.
But we can't wait. The whole... You know it depends on our finding out this thing.
Well, look, if the delay gets too long, I'll take Han. He and I will go over to the mainland and make a preliminary reconnaissance.
We haven't got time for that.
Well, I won't risk your capture on such a mission.
It's up to me if I want to risk it.
Yes, sir.
We'll wait for word from the mainland, but not for long. For two freezing days, we shuttled back and forth from our little ship to the island waiting for word. Every lost minute precious. Finally, on the third day...
Well, they got word from the mainland.
What is it?
Somebody tipped the Chinese off there was going to be a landing, and they've mined the beach areas and laid a trap.
Can't we risk it anyhow? We can't wait any longer.
Well, they're making arrangements in another area further south.
Good, let's get going.
But the beach is mined down there, too.
And it's possibly another sellout?
Well, that's the chance we take.
All right, then. We take it.
The time set is March 13th, sometime after 10 at night.
13th? You superstitious?
Not very. I was married on Friday the 13th. You?
I was born on April 1st. Because the sea continued rough, we transferred to a larger ship, and under the cover of night proceeded south to our rendezvous point, 20 miles off the enemy-held coast.
Last rundown. All right, General.
What's that bombarding we can hear?
It's a few miles north of us. Some United Nations warships are shelling the coast.
Oh, that's a nice complication we hadn't thought of. Maybe a ship has been assigned to give our stretch of beach a going over.
I don't think so, sir. Now, look, General, when we come to our offshore point, we'll get into a motor sampan, and then we'll head toward shore. That's going to be a long, cold trip, about 20 miles. We'll be dragging behind what they call a tope. Well, that's a sort of oriental raft. When we get within 200 or 300 yards of shore, we'll transfer that and paddle in.
And no chance of the raft breaking up in the surf?
Well, they're pretty sturdy.
You know how long we'd live if we got tossed in a drink this time of year?
No.
3 minutes. That's how cold the water is. Okay, go ahead.
Well, right now we should remove all identification. Dog tags, wallets. Your general star, of course.
Right.
Oh, and I think you'd better shave off your mustache.
Why?
Make you look less occidental.
Oh. Okay. That's easy.
All right, now, if everything goes well...
And we haven't been sold out.
Yeah, we'll be met on the beach by some guerrillas we have there. They'll have rounded out someone who's had close contact with the epidemic, so you can question him.
And if this information proves unsatisfactory?
While you're questioning him, I'll try to get into the village to spot some victims of the disease so he can bring them out if you need them.
And then we come back the same way we went, right?
Right. Only it's going to be harder bucking the waves.
Okay. Is that it?
That's it.
Hey, now. Do I look less occidental without the mustache?
I never know you.
Now, what do we do?
Now, we just wait.
Well, I should be good at that after all my years in the Army. Isn't this the spot in the movies where they synchronize their watches?
Oh, we're slowing down. Yes?
Lieutenant Drake.
Yes, Hon.
It is time. You are there.
All right, Hon. Ready, Mr. Yee?
Ready. At exactly 10 p.m. on March 13th, Drake, two Korean interpreters, and I went over the side and into the boat of Sampan riding alongside the ship. Just as we shoved away, Drake called back to the captain.
Wait for us until just before dawn. Then leave and don't return. If we're not back by then, we'll try to make it through the line.
For 2 hours, the motor Sampan labored along towards the coast, dragging the raft behind her. The ship quickly blotted out on the horizon, and there was nothing but white caps glimmering under a quarter moon that lighted up the unfriendliest stretch of ocean I'd ever seen.
Do you see the shore?
Where?
There. Just off the starboard bow.
Yeah. Can't our motor be heard?
No. Anyway, we'll transfer to the raft soon. I know it sounds loud right here, but in this weather, and with that sea pounding, they...
What's the matter?
Take a look. On shore there.
Lights?
Yeah.
Right where we're going to land, isn't it?
Just about. And there's more. It's a convoy of trucks.
Convoy trucks riding along with their headlights on full blast.
Yeah.
Think it's a welcoming committee?
Well, they seem to disappear down there. Probably on their way up to the front.
Do we keep going or do we wait?
We keep going.
About 200 yards from shore, we transferred to the raft. As we paddled towards shore, the icy water broke over the sides and froze on our faces.
Keep it headed to starboard as much as you can.
You see anything?
No, we won't see anything until we beach. The party where to meet will be up in the bushes.
Oh, what about the mines?
Well, we'll beach. Hold tight. They'll come down and lead us through the mines.
Our planes?
Must be.
Well, that'll take care of those convoy lights.
I hope they've had plenty of target practice. And this in a convoy could be a hit on us.
Pounding surf threw our raft onto the beach.
Down. Get down, Chung. Han, get down. Stay down till someone makes a move toward us.
See anyone?
No, we won't till they come out of the cover of the brush. You'll see them against the snow.
Lieutenant Drake, look. Somebody's there.
Yeah. How are we going to know they're there? Right ones until they're on top of us.
Wait a minute, listen.
Jump. All right. Get on us.
Okay.
Okay. But wait for him to come down. You don't want to step on any mines.
Then we better pull the boat up into the brush.
No, we leave it here for a getaway.
A getaway through that surf?
All right, Han, take over.
Yes, sir. He says, is this Mr. E?
Tell him yes, and what do we do now?
He say they have a stretcher bearer to talk to Mr. E. You go up to cave edge of beach.
All right, let's go.
Well, Mr. E, this is where I leave you. I'll take a couple of the men and go into the village.
Right.
While you're questioning the stretcher bearer, I can line up a couple of commies who are down with the plague. Then if we need to bring them out and take them to the ship for examination, I'll have worked out a plan for getting them out of the village.
All right, go ahead.
Oh, one more thing. If I'm not back in a reasonable time, and you found out what you want, And if it begins to look dangerous to hang around here any longer, start out for the boat. It's more important for you to get back.
How will you make it back?
I'll make out all right. Now remember, sir, the ship leaves its station just before dawn, and you've got a long haul back to her.
All right. Good luck, Lieutenant.
I hope you find what you want. And remember, if the guards say the commies are coming, light out for the boat and forget about me.
We went up the beach about 100 yards, Hahn and I and some of the guerrillas. Then up a ravine until we came to a pile of brush that concealed the cave. I had one last awful twinge of doubt. Then I went in and found myself in a sort of underground cavern about 30 feet deep. One of the Koreans lighted an oil lamp, and I set about questioning the stretcher bearer through Han. No, Han. Ask him how many cases there are in the village.
Yes, sir. 이 동네 병자가 얼마나 있어? 한 1,500명쯤 됩니다. He says 1,500.
1,500. Of typhoid or of 흑사병?
장질부사요? 그렇다면 흑사병입니까? 그 대개가 다 흑사병이에요. He says mostly 흑사병.
Ask him to describe this 흑사병 in detail. Exactly what it looks like. What do the doctors think it is, and so on.
Yes, sir. 이 흑사병에 대해서 좀 자세히 얘기해 주십시오. 어떻게 생겼는지, 또 의사들은 어떻게...
While Han and I were questioning the stretcher bearer, Drake and Chung and another South Korean had quietly slipped by the sentries guarding the village and made their way through the narrow alleys between the rickety native huts where the victims of the epidemic were quartered. The village was almost deserted, except for the patients, whose moaning rose up from the shacks.
How much further, Chong?
Right here, in this hut. Here, 20, maybe 36.
Turn your flash on them. All right, turn it off. Close it. Now, how near is this hut to the edge of the village?
Almost at the edge.
And the sentries between here and the beach?
3 sentries out there. Between here and beach.
So if we had to come back to pick up a few of these fellows,
we'll
send them, huh? Sentry. All right. Don't run. Tell them we're doctors. Looking after the sick.
여보.
이사요. 병자가 죽고 있어요.
오, 그럼 가시오.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, come on now. Let's get out of here. And take care of those sentries, but quietly, understand?
Han, let's get back to the symptoms.
Yes, Mr. E.
These sores the stretcher bearer talked about. The sores on the body. Ask him more about that. Where on the body?
몸 어디가 아픕니까? 전신에 전기가 납니다. 그리고 얼굴이 시커매져요. He says they are all over body and face.
Wait a minute. Is he absolutely sure they break out on the face too?
얼굴에 전기가 난다는 게 사실이요? 네, 그렇습니다. He says yes. He's sure.
그건 누구야?
What's that? Wasn't that the guard?
Yes, Lieutenant Drake returning.
Oh, good.
Everything's all set. Take a couple of commies from the village if you need them, Mr. Yee.
We won't need them.
How come?
This stretcher bearer says that the sores always break out on the face as well as elsewhere.
What's that mean?
That means it isn't bubonic plague.
It isn't?
No, because plague may turn the face black, but it never erupts there. It sticks to the lymphatic glands, and there are no lymphatic glands in the face. So we're sure it's not bubonic plague.
That's it, then, huh?
That's it. You might...
What's
he say, Han?
He said those chests are from the village.
They may have come across those sentries. We better get started.
All right, let's go. Thank them all, Han. Thank them for their cooperation and their courage. And tell them one of these days we'll be back.
On his return to Tokyo, General Sams was awarded the Distinguished Service Cross with the following citation. By extraordinary heroism in action against an armed enemy, General Sams acquitted himself with rare distinction as head of a special operations group whose hazardous mission of personally determining the possible presence of pestilential disease among personnel of enemy forces dictated deep infiltration into enemy-held territory.
General Sam's party returned to the offshore rendezvous with conclusive information of such significance as to affect the immediate conduct of the United Nations armed effort in Korea. Thanks to Wendell Corey and the Cavalcade Players for tonight's story, Dr. Commando. Tonight's DuPont Cavalcade was written by Robert Anderson and was based on Peter Kalischer's article, Dr. Commando, the true account of Brigadier General Sam's daring mission behind enemy lines in Korea. Original music was composed by Arden Cornwell, conducted by Donald Voorhees. The program was directed by John Zoller. In tonight's cast, Wendell Corey starred as Brigadier General Sams. Les Damon was Lieutenant Drake. Howard Smith was Chief of Staff. The Koreans were Chung Soon-yoon, Dan Lee, Jun-gyu Park, and Ki Soon-yoon.
The DuPont Cavalcade of America comes to you from the Belasco Theater in New York and is sponsored by the DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry.
The Cavalcade of America, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 26th of February, 1952, on NBC. And that does it for this hour of True History on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.